Welcome to episode 32 of Climate Champions, and thank you to James Henry Riddell for the original Climate Champions tunes. I'm Lee Krivat, and each week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what motivated them to engage in climate change mitigation, what they do to help, and what their vision for the future is. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. On episode 32, my guest is Bernadette Del Chiaro, Executive Director of the California Solar and Storage Association. After graduating from Berkeley with a BS in Conservation and Resource Studies, Bernadette moved to Connecticut and successfully fought to shut down or clean up 5 coal plants. She moved back to California and has continued to organize for climate change mitigation at Environment California for 10 years and for the last 6 years as the Executive Director of the California Solar and Storage Association. Bernadette recognizes that the deep pockets of the fossil fuel industry makes fighting climate change a very difficult battle, even in California. But her past success, capability to organize for change, and tremendous passion gives me confidence that we will find a way to unite on this defining challenge of our time. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and my guest today is Bernadette Del Chiaro, Executive Director at the California Solar and Storage Association. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Thank you, Lee. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. Can you talk about the motivating moment that caused you to start being a climate change mitigator?
Sure. I mean, I've been doing this for a really long time, so it's somewhat hard to find one moment. But if I had to, I would go back to 1989. I was a senior in high school, and me and a handful of my classmates were challenged to enter into a statewide competition of biology students competing at Lawrence Hall of Science in Berkeley on a science topic of our choice. And we put together a presentation at that point. I think we even probably were still using overhead plastic projectors.
Uh-huh. I remember those.
And my little team and I, we came up with climate change. This was a year after the intergovernmental panel on climate change was formed, a year after President Bush acknowledged climate change existed. Jason Hansen had just testified before Congress. It was a new big issue. So we did a presentation, and it was in the research and making that presentation that really probably just solidified for me that this was the issue of our generation to tackle. So that was 1989.
Wow, that was early. It was very early.
Running ever since.
That's excellent. Can you talk about personal reasons why climate change mitigation is important to you?
You know, I have a hard time with this question in general because I can't think of why climate change wouldn't be personal to everybody. It's a hard question for me to answer. It is somebody once said, I work to save the planet because I happen to be addicted to life as it is today. And that, I mean, how can we not work and how could it not be personal? It is the essence of living on this planet. So, you know, it's about me. It's about my family. It's about the creatures on the earth we share it with. I mean, how could it not be? It's the very air we breathe. I mean, there's nothing but personal reasons to want to stop this climate change patterns that we're creating. There's every reason under the sun to do it.
I could not have said what you said, but I agree 100%.
It was very articulate.
It's exactly how I feel. Yeah. No, it's very articulate, actually. When you meet people that don't believe that the climate is changing or that don't think humans are responsible, how do you try to convince them?
This is going to be another gotcha answer, I'm afraid, Lee, but I actually don't try. I'm an organizer by training, and one of the main tenets of organizing is you organize people where they're at. We're not going to change people's minds if they're not at this point in time. I mean, back in 1989, I could rattle off all the science and try to convince my parents and whoever else would listen to me about how climate change was real. But now it's 2019. If people aren't convinced, I don't think we're probably going to convince them, at least not on the timescale that we need. So this gets into why I do what I do, which is I promote solutions that get everybody nodding their head And if you can promote solutions that get people nodding their heads for reasons other than climate change, you're solving climate change, you're mobilizing people where they're at, getting them to nod their head, and you're getting across all of the walls that have been built up for reasons that we could spend a whole hour talking about around climate change and why it's become so absurdly politicized and controversial when it shouldn't be. But I don't actually spend an ounce of energy trying to convince anybody. I actually try to spend all of my energy mobilizing and capturing the support for clean energy solutions and building those solutions as fast as we humanly can possibly go.
That's very inspiring. So now I'm going to ask you, so what do you do?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, what do you spend your time doing?
So I've been for a very long time working in the public policy arena to promote clean energy solutions. And I focus my time and have for about 15 years now on promoting distributed rooftop or parking lot top or farm adjacent, whatever you want to call it, solar energy and now increasingly batteries paired with the solar panels. I just see it as one solution of many, but a really important one that we still have only scratched the surface of capturing all of that clean energy and also capturing, again, relating to your earlier question, but capturing all of the public support, business support, the whole, like just getting all of our kind of economy firing on all cylinders when it comes to clean energy. And I feel like rooftop solar does that better than almost any of the other technologies. Not that the other solutions aren't just as important, but I feel like this one has the most potential to get the most people's head nodding, get most people engaged, and create the most benefits for society at large in a way that I think is on par with the problem we're trying to solve.
So looking at the graphs for solar and for storage, the storage trail solar, they've come down a lot in price, making a solar plus storage solution more affordable. With regards to the cost, what do you see happening in the future?
I see the price of storage hopefully coming down quicker than what it took us to get the price for photovoltaics and inverters and that pull package down. So we're hoping the next 5 years, we're going to see what it took us 10 years to do on the PV side on storage. And I think there's every reason to be bullish about that. Obviously, public policy still reigns supreme in terms of creating markets and market opportunity and cost reductions. So we got a lot of work ahead of us, and there's a lot of risk that we won't achieve those goals. But I think if policy goes our way and if roadblocks aren't thrown up, we should see storage come down rapidly in price. And absolutely, we should be able to deploy solar and storage ubiquitously across California and across the country and really kind of get from, you know, it took us 13 years to build 1 million solar roofs in California. We're hoping we can build 1 million solar plus storage systems in the next 5 years easily and do it quickly.
How do you see electric vehicles fitting in?
I see them fitting in terms of a broader climate change package. So just the same way that you would see windmills and large-scale solar and other renewable projects, it's all systems ago. And I see vehicles as being a critical component of both potentially demand response type technologies, making the renewables fit together a little more neatly. But it's more just decarbonizing and through electrification. And so it's all of these we have so many solutions on the table available to us right now. And we just need all of them deployed at the same time. And the engineers, the smart people like you.
No, not like me.
These are good problems to be able to solve. Like how to integrate all of these little puzzles, all of these little technological puzzles. These are really good problems for engineers to solve. My focus is how to create that problem for the engineer to solve by through demand.
That's excellent. So you talked about 1989 being the year that you got inspired.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your prior background from 89 until now?
I basically started at that point in time was sort of bit by the bug of fighting for climate change and fighting for a sort of sane environment. And I went to, of course, UC Berkeley, where all good granola crunching enviros go. And I studied environmental science and political science, kind of this combined major, and have been working in advocacy and organizing on basically energy issues ever since. So one of my most foundational moments in my career was I launched a campaign to clean up 5 really dirty coal-fired power plants that were in Connecticut. So I moved across the country to take this job to organize local communities in Connecticut to clean up or shut down their coal plants. I did that. It took us 5 years to win that campaign, but we did. We ended up passing the strongest state legislation. It was actually a multi-pollutant. It also included carbon dioxide, which was at the time, again, climate change was big, but in the 90s, policymakers were not regulating it yet. So we were the first state to do that. And then I decided I wanted to come back to my home state of California after winning that campaign. I was sort of done and came back to California and decided that I really wanted to focus, again, to your earlier question, on solutions. And if California couldn't really push the solutions, if we couldn't basically make one of our greatest exports good ideas on the environment, then what good does it do shutting down coal plants in Connecticut? Like, this should be, I just saw this potential for California to take all of its technological know-how, its business acumen that we have here, and its supportive population, and really push the envelope on the solutions side of the ledger. Not to say that it wasn't important that my colleagues and other organizations were continuing to fight the dirty stuff. I think it's a left-right punch in terms of solving these problems. You have to put a spotlight on the dirty sources of pollution and fight those head-on, but you got to put just as much energy and time into the putting the solutions on the table and creating the economy to drive that, those solutions. And so I just decided that was the niche I wanted to play and in. And so basically from 2002 on, I've been here in Sacramento pushing for a lot of big clean energy initiatives to really drive a market and demand for renewables with a particular focus on rooftop.
What challenges have you run into? It seems like shutting down those coal plants would be challenging.
I find the most challenging thing in this work, by far, isn't actually the naysayers. I find the most challenging thing are sort of the infighting amongst the allies. There's just a tremendous amount of disagreement and inefficiencies that happen because of either egos or turf management of like different organizations, or just people getting fixated on their one solution and thinking that it has to be the right solution to the exclusion of other things. So I can't tell you, for example, how many times I've advocated for big, bold ideas around stationary energy storage, only to get pushback from people that are pushing for electric vehicles. You know, as if those two solutions are at all mutually exclusive. It's almost absurd to say it out loud, but it is absolutely a dynamic. And to me, those are the greatest challenges and the things that just kind of suck my energy. But the naysayers, we're on the right side. All the facts are with us. The public, by and large, is with us. No matter where you go in the country, I've got relatives all across the Midwest, and there's not a single one that doesn't get excited about solar panels. I mean, my Facebook feed is littered with my Idaho relatives sending me really cool ideas about, you know, covering roadways with solar panels. And to me, it's just, it is indicative. It is a technology that captures the imagination and gets everybody excited. We just have to harness that and put it in the right direction.
So folks are excited. We have solutions. This is a very urgent problem that we're not tackling fast enough. So given that, it seems like the world is fertile for this. What do we need to click into place to get it going as fast as we need it?
Yeah, great question. Our politics, our political system, even here in Sacramento, it still tends toward the fossil fuel lobby. At the end of the day, after all we've done in California, we still do not have all of our policy and our policymakers pulling in the same direction. And it is a slog to get through every single legislative year. And we spend, at the California solar and storage industry, we alone spend at least half our time just on defensive work to keep bad initiatives from going forward that would knock us off flat on our feet, you know, on our backs. It all comes down to politics and the power of the fossil fuel industry. That's why we haven't gotten as far as we need to get, and it's why we're not moving as fast as we need to move. It is not a lack of public will or a lack of solutions.
So we need the leadership both in California and for the U.S. to treat this as the problem of our time.
Absolutely. And we have not achieved that. And so, you know, you could critique me and my colleagues that have been organizers since 1989. We still haven't quite addressed that core problem. We haven't done it. But it's interesting. A couple years before I did that high school presentation on climate change, the ozone layer, the hole in the ozone layer was announced. I think it was 1985, if I remember correctly, that scientists in Antarctica announced the hole in the ozone layer, which for me as a young little high school student, that was really terrifying, right? That was one of the first kind of, whoa, the environment.
Absolutely.
Right? Montreal Protocol signed 2 years later. How was it that we were able to tackle the hole in the ozone layer? And, you know, there's lots of different people that have theories about this, and, you know, it has to do with, in part, skin cancer was a much scarier real threat to people than this sort of futuristic climate change idea. So that's one. Two is the CFC lobby is nowhere near the fossil fuel lobby in terms of...
You're messing around with a lot more money and a lot more power with climate change.
But that's really what it comes down to. We could come around and solve this, and we could have done it 30 years ago, but there's a lot of entrenched interests that are going to just stand in the way until the very last. And it's a problem that I'm hoping I'll solve and see a solution in my lifetime, but we're not quite there yet.
If we don't see a solution in your lifetime, we're in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely, yeah.
Can you talk about the successes you're most proud of?
Well, no doubt passing the Million Solar Roofs Initiative. 2006, we finally, after 3 years, passed the California premier legislation and the country's premier legislation to promote, you know, individual customer-owned solar energy. Really made international changes to the market right alongside Japan and Germany and what they did to the marketplace. And really, I think, revolutionized the way people think about energy, or has the potential to still revolutionize the way people think about energy. And they think about grids and they think about utilities. We have not yet turned our utilities into the utilities of the future that they can be, but we've laid the groundwork. And so that undoubtedly is probably my proudest accomplishment, is helping pass that bill.
Do you want to talk about any other accomplishments?
You know, I've played a role in a lot of different important policies in California. AB 32, of course, helped lead a fight to defend AB 32, fighting against Prop 26. The first RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard in California. I was part of a coalition that helped pass that. But more importantly, we actually went down after that bill was passed, went down to Los Angeles and got LADWP to really start to change course and adopt their own Renewable Portfolio Standard, because they weren't actually captured in the bill. And that really had some pretty groundbreaking role in terms of getting the city of Los Angeles to divest from coal, which is probably, from a pure greenhouse gas emissions perspective, might be the single biggest thing that I've done, was helping to pass and getting LA to go green finally. That, and obviously the cleaning up the coal-fired power plants in Connecticut, are just some of the things off the top of my head that I'm proud of. I think also more recently, when I came on board, we were called CalSEA at the time, California Solar Energy Industry Association. We've been around for 40 years. They were just crazy enough to hire me as their executive director, somebody who brought, as I've mentioned a couple times, more of an organizing and organization building sort of skill set. And I'm really proud of what we've, as a team, built CalSEA up into. We started with fewer than 100 companies. We now have over 500 member companies. We're continually growing year over year. We've beefed up our staff. We're not anywhere near where we need to be to really truly service this growing industry, but we've really made a lot of changes. And one of the reasons why I took this job was sort of the fun challenge of getting businesses, both small neighborhood mom and pop contractors, all the way up to international manufacturers, to get them to actually engage in California politics. So in a couple weeks now, on August 21st, we're going to hold our 6th annual lobby day. We're hoping to have up to 400 people descend on the Capitol and lobby their state legislators and just be political. You know, roll up your sleeves, get down on the field. I always say solar's not a spectator sport. You got to get down on the field and fight for it. And so to kind of imbue that kind of grassroots politics and engagement, political engagement in a business association, I think is pretty unique. And I'm pretty proud of it. I think it makes a difference. And it's really meaningful to the people that I work with. There's a lot of folks that come up to Sacramento that have never even stepped foot in the Capitol, much less ever lobbied. I just feel like there's something bigger, you know, there's something bigger than the sum of the parts there to that of engaging average everyday boots on the roof, solar installers and company presidents in just everyday politics. It's really important work.
Then Horton hears a who, right? They're being demolished, right? Uh-huh. People don't believe that there's a city down there on that dust speck.
Right.
And Horton's telling them all, they've all got to scream, every last one. And finally, like this last kid who's just all alone in the corner right. does a yip or a yop, you know, and it gets through and yeah. people hear and understand it's a problem.
Yeah.
But that message of everybody has to get engaged and scream so loud.
Yep.
that the problem is accepted as a problem, we get the urgency we need to solve
it. Yep. I love that metaphor. I think that's absolutely a perfect allegory, maybe, as it might be. And just there's, I don't like this idea of like one small person, because I actually believe in organizing together. So that's where that alley, you know, that story to me, it's everybody in that town had to shout. And it was the one little kid that added the final decibel,
but
right?
But the real story is everybody
exactly.
has to get involved.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your vision for the future? Where do you see us ending up in 30 or 40 years?
I'm hoping it's much sooner than 30 or 40 years that we get to this vision, but I truly see an electric car in every driveway, solar panels on every roof, a battery in every garage, decarbonized buildings, decarbonized transportation, and a more prosperous, job-filled, affordable energy system than we have today, and one that doesn't ignite World War III. I truly believe in that and see that vision for us. And like I said, there's a lot of folks that think that vision is going to be technologically challenging. And I think you and I both know challenges are good things. We can handle challenges. It's not technologically impossible. We absolutely can get there.
Is there anything else you want to say?
The thing we haven't touched upon that I think is also really, really interesting food for thought around solar and why I think rooftop solar, and I think electric cars have the same role to play here, is that there is something extra powerful about technological solutions that can be put in the hands of everyday people that are visible, that are really visible. So unlike double paint windows, for example, solar panels on a roof and an electric car in the driveway are visible, tangible, relatable solutions to a daunting problem. And I think both the human nature of kind of getting overwhelmed when problems seem too big, it combats that by just going, okay, but I can do my one thing. And then the aggregate, that one thing, is really powerful in terms of fighting for the solution. But also the visibility of it, of, oh, my neighbor has it, I can do it too. And if my neighbor has it and I have it, then our school can get it. And if our school can get it, then our politician can feel comfortable voting for it. There is something about that kind of neighborhood, neighbor-to-neighbor, community-to-community infrastructure almost that we build with these sort of really tangible, visible technology solutions like rooftop solar panels and electric cars. It has a you know, kind of a snowball effect in both terms of people's investments and their lifestyle choices, and then also in terms of politics and how politicians view these solutions. And I think that in and of itself is, it's like, again, it almost matches the actual greenhouse gas emission reduction value of a rooftop solar panel in terms of its importance to solving climate change. Too many times we get sort of fixated on just, let's just reduce the GHGs as quickly as possible on paper. And we kind of forget we're trying to change a whole economy and change society. And we got to do that in ways that everyday average people can engage with us on. We can't do it all top down. So to me, that's why I choose these kind of solutions. That's why I've just focused on rooftop solar, Again, there's other things I could have spent my career focused on, but this has been my thing, and I'm going to stick with it for a while. But it's greater than just the GHG emission reductions of one solar panel. It is about changing the way people approach a problem that otherwise seems insurmountable and daunting.
Wow. Is it okay if I wrap this up?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up with a wrap. There should be an EV in every driveway, solar panels for all. And if it's really visible, it will snowball. You did a science fair in Berkeley and you didn't whine, and that launched your journey in 1989. For people who think the world as we know it isn't going bye-bye, it's not worth your time to convince. You don't even try. Your first major success was your first major goal was killing five plants in Connecticut that were coal. You're oh so proud that in LA the city, you worked to get rid of coal with DWP. I'm going to end it there.
All right. That was awesome. There were some good ones in there.
Bernadette's vision of an electric car in every driveway, solar panels on every roof, and a battery in every garage, and how they encourage engagement, are tangible, and provide visibility are great arguments for more renewable distributed energy resources. An especially important point she made was that once people relate to and accept a new technology, it is easier for politicians to support it. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And if you're in San Diego and want to trade your concern for climate change for a few hours of some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. Contact me to confirm specific show dates. And if you want to release from some of life's stress or to improve your speaking skills, consider taking a class at an improv workshop in your town. Bernadette was first inspired to fight against climate change as a senior at a high school science fair in 1989, a year after President Bush acknowledged it was a threat. 30 years later, and it is 72 degrees in Greenland, and 12 billion tons of ice has just melted in 24 hours. I completely understand Bernadette's point that the time for arguing about the science is over. Our climate is changing right now, aggressively, right before our eyes. And we need to organize people where they already are at. The time for debate is behind us. Immediate action is required to mitigate climate change.